People don't fail at real estate because they suck. They fail because there's too many ways to succeed. That's why I suggest you focus on the most important skill in all of real estate, which is finding deals. I'm Colbert Johnson, and in this podcast, I share the exact steps I've used to source 400 deals by age 24. This will allow you to do three things: control your deal flow, make unlimited income, and build your empire as an off-market operator.
You talked about some of the lessons you learned. If you could highlight some of those as you climbed out of the pit that shaped you, and then where are you at today? Let's dive into some of the businesses you have, because I think this is super important for the listeners to hear.
Yeah, I think the number one thing really taught me is, you know, leaning on people and really what delegation means. You know, when you're sick like that, you still need stuff to get done. So, you know, that's when I started really getting familiar with, you know, what is, you know, assigning responsibility to other people and bringing people in and trusting them mean. And that's why I've built the companies I have, is because of other people and partners. So, that was really the main lesson I took away from that, is exactly that. Like, it's, you'd like, 20% of $10 million is much better than 100% of $1 million and hating your life. So, you know, kind of designing all my companies around that thesis. So right now, kind of my, I guess, quote unquote, like personal holding company of companies is I have the real estate company. So we still operate. We just opened a headquarters in San Diego, a pretty big headquarters. So we're a team of 35-ish on that company. That's mixed with about half stateside employees and about half virtual overseas. And then we have, I guess, in our marketing side, we have like 50 cold callers. So that, I guess, adds to our payroll, but I don't count them as like internal team. That's flipping wholesaling. And then we do, I have a call center I co-founded a few years ago with a couple other guys, and we have two partners in that now. And we expanded beyond real estate into solar and customer service and all kinds of different avenues. And that's a pretty incredible business. And same thing there. We just have a really good team, really good partners. I'm not in the day-to-day. I'm able to kind of do what's my zone of genius, which is, you know, working on systems and working on the division of the company. I would say, like, when it comes to like the integrator and the visionary, there's like a small subset of the population, like 5 to 10%, that's both. And I think I definitely fall into that, where I kind of have traits of both. So I'm able to kind of be the guy that formulates systems and the guy that runs projects and the guy that kind of drives vision, which is, I love doing all of it. So, and then we do a lot of consulting stuff. So I do consulting for, you know, newer investors all the way up to hedge funds on their off market deal sourcing efforts, whatever asset class they want to focus on. And then the single family side as well. So, those are kind of the things that we're into right now. Obviously, we have some, as every entrepreneur does, there's always things that catch my eyes. I'm like, ooh, I want to try that. But I try to stay kind of to my four or five things best I can.
Yep. So. That shiny object syndrome. No, it'll get every one of us. It'll get every one of us. tell us a little bit about hiring. And you know, you mentioned that you had to learn the lesson of 20% of 10 million is way better than 100% of 1 million. And especially the underlying message, I just want to highlight this here for a second. The underlying message that I really love hearing from you, is all about that, like, personal and mental health, and like quality of life. I love that. That's incredible, because like you said, like, very few people understand that. But back to the hiring piece, for those listeners out there who are in a position where maybe they feel like they're doing too much, or they want to hire, but they're not really sure, like, when's the right time to hire. How did you make those decisions and then go figure out where to pull people from?
Yeah. So it's kind of a multifaceted question. You know, hiring is something you really only learn from doing. Like, you can go talk to all kinds of business owners. You can get all the predictive text personality tests. You can get the SOPs in place, the onboarding process, the check-ins, the weekly scorecards, everything of that nature. You can get it all in place, but until you do it, it just doesn't matter. You know, so hiring to me is the one thing that separates entrepreneurs that fail from ones that don't, or entrepreneurs that are constantly chasing their tail, chasing the next deal, the next check. They can't ever, you know, scale and, you know, build that bridge completely. So I think the main reason entrepreneurs burn out and fail, which I realized back then, is because you don't have enough leverage. Because leverage is what allows you to live the life you want. Like, if I want to be skiing the next 3 days, I can, because I have an incredible team. Versus, you know, if you're a one-man show, yeah, you might be doing $1 million and you're taking home a little more from that company, but, you know, you're discounting yourself, because you don't have a lever to pull on. So for me, hiring is just high leverage thing to do in any company. I think it's our duties also as entrepreneurs. You know, I'll give a few examples. Like my mom, I love her to death, but she's ran a real estate company for 30 years and does very well every year as a kind of a one lady shop with one assistant, but it's chaos. There's no process, no system, no hiring. There's no who does what, when. It's random. And because of that, you know, she's 54 and she's still chasing the next check, right? Because she never got out of that seat. So she never could focus on, hey, buying real estate or this and that, because she didn't give herself that leverage and she had every opportunity to. So I think in any industry, it's important to, you know, bring people in. You know, what I kind of a strategy I like to do is I write down everything I do on a day-to-day basis, pretty much weekly. And, you know, I'll highlight in green stuff that I truly believe can only be done by me. Stuff in yellow that I can delegate. And I take it a step further to kind of break down hours, like what's the hourly rate for that task. And if I find myself doing a $10 hour task, I'm doing myself a disservice on the company. So, yeah, I think it's everything in a business, whatever you're doing, whether you're a broker, you're an investor. If you have revenue coming in the door, you got to start buying back your time and getting leverage.
I love it. I love it. And I love that little piece about, some tactical advice there. and the story you shared about your mom is something that I think every realtor and broker can relate to. You know, we call it the transaction treadmill, and at some point, you know, you never get off, and then you've got these realtors out there that are, much older than your mom is. And they're like, well, I can't retire because I never set myself up. I never did anything, right? I don't have a retirement. So I'm super intrigued as well about, the call center. You mentioned that you built your own and now you've expanded into, the solar and other lead sources. How did the call center come about? What happened there? What was the driving force? Because most real estate investors and pros are just like, hey, you know, I'll go pick up the phone and find a call center, right? I mean, you could throw a stone and find a call center in real estate. So why did you create your own?
Yeah, you know, it wasn't on purpose. So I guess my thing with like any business I start that does well, I don't start on purpose. And that's the thing I've kind of realized about golden object syndrome is like the businesses that you start from your core business end up being aligned with that company and skill sets you use in that company. And it shouldn't feel like a new business. It's just like, oh, I have this. Who else could use it? And so towards the beginning, when we had that first office of 10 to 12 sales guys in office, we needed a lot of leads. And we were paying other services and it just didn't make sense because they weren't reliable. They weren't trustworthy. There's no one I could talk to. It was hard to get a hold of them. Leads were inconsistent. I'm like, well, let me try this thing out. So I got connected kind of by the grace of God to a guy in the Philippines at the time that had worked for Samsung, AT&T, and had managerial experience in a call center. He said, hey, we can do this thing together. So I just went for it. I had no idea what I was doing, hired our first set of 5 to 10 agents. And again, around them, put in procedures, processes, quality assurance, things of that nature. Grew that to about 50 agents. And then at that time, a buddy of mine, Elliot Smith, who I still work with closely to this day, he came up to me and he was like, hey, like I can use this in my company. And not only can I use it in my company, I think a lot of people I know can use this. So he started shuffling me clients, and 2 or 3 months later, the profit from the, cause we were probably getting charged $6, $5 an hour and charging 7 or 8. And so 2 or 3 months later, the profit at the time was covering my whole company's marketing expense. And I was like, holy crap, there's something here. And then, so there I kept just one off saying, hey, to one of my buddies, say, hey, try this. And another buddy, hey, try this. And eventually that continued to spiral until I did a podcast. I did Tucker Merrihew's, Real Deals podcast when I was like 2019. And after the podcast, he called me and he was like, hey, I think you have something real here. I've grown and sold many companies. If you think there's, you know, if you trust me, I think I know where to take this if I step in as a partner. And I was like, yeah, come on out. So Tucker's been the CEO for a couple of years now. And it's been incredible, that partnership. And so yeah, that's grown incredibly. And I think we just have a better operation. We treat it like a real company. Like that's the one thing I think about having my two partners, Tucker, Merrihew, and James Danner. Like they've grown and ran massive companies, and they're very well known in the real estate community. So it's an easy sale as well on top of that. But yeah, we just have, you know, a real team. We have a stateside team. We have a real client concierge team. We have a really good onboarding team. We have a really good product. We built software around it to make investors' life easy for tracking their leads, managing their leads, and things of that nature. And our stick is incredible. We lose probably year over year 5 to 10% max of clients that we onboard. And yeah, it's a very, on that real estate side, that was how it started. It's an incredible business. And then we've spiraled off from there because it's a pretty, the lead generation space in general is a kind of an infinite ceiling business. So we're definitely taking advantage of that. But again, it wasn't on purpose. Same for our consulting stuff. Like that just came to be from me being on the Bigger Pocket Show and that attention coming. It was never like, let's go teach this. It was just people coming to me and saying, hey, how can I do what you guys do? So that's my, I think, biggest advice is if something feels like it's outside of your current business, or it's not something you already do that you can't just sell to someone else, probably don't do it, at least for a long time, because that's where people get into trouble.
Yeah,
I want to go back to where you kind of talked about being a visionary versus like implementing systems. Yeah. And, you know, props to you for being that person that kind of is both. I think a lot of entrepreneurs, I mean, it really falls on either side, but this is something Brooks and I talk about a lot because we're both very visionary-esque. And then when it comes down to the day-to-day and the implementing systems, that's kind of where we feel that pushback. So do you have any, I guess, tactical advice for, I guess one or the other, but I'm asking selfishly for, you know, implementing systems and kind of starting to integrate these visions that entrepreneurs tend to have?
Yeah, you know, I think I'm very agreed with the idea that you shouldn't do both unless you fall into that subset of the population that is that you need an integrator, right? Because I think eventually that's how you burn out if you're doing stuff that's not really in your zone of genius. Like the guys I know, like Brandon Turner, I'm very good friends with Brandon Turner now. And like that guy is an idea machine. Like he'll sit there until, like I played poker with him till 4 a.m. in the morning. And he's throwing out ideas till 4 a.m. And he has to have those assistants and team around him. And he says it on podcasts that he's like notoriously lazy. He just throws out ideas. Like his brain works like I've never seen before. And so he has to have a team around him to capture those and turn them into a system, a process, or a tool, or tell him, no, hey, Brandon, we can't do that. That's not going to work. Do that. So I would say there's nothing wrong with either. I would say kind of how I think about it is, you know, if you have the vision, say you're a plane company, you have the vision of, oh, I want to build this amazing plane. It's going to be the best plane ever. Like you wouldn't go be the engineer too. Like you would hire an engineer. And I think the same thing. I think, you know, kind of, it's kind of funny to use that analogy because my grandpa was he did 18 years of school. He became a Boeing engineer. He went back to Johns Hopkins, became a doctor, and went back to school, became a lawyer. And so I think he had that kind of same brain that I do. That's very much like, because he built a law firm, it's build a business and also kind of be the engineer. But I think if you don't fall in that subset, it's honestly better because you can focus on one thing. I don't think anyone should do both. As a founder, as your bootstrap company, you have to do both for a while. You have to wear both hats. But even still, you can go find cheap labor to build a system or build a process or a tool on Upwork. You can pay a developer $20 an hour for the software you're building. Like whatever you're trying to do with the technology that's out there right now, you can find someone to do it for you. So you don't have to step into that role. Even if they're on call, that you put them in a Slack channel and they can facilitate whatever idea you have.
Beautiful. Thank you.
I love it. I love that. For those of you guys listening at home, the best way again to connect with Cole is his Twitter, his TikTok, his YouTube, and his Instagram. He also has a free wholesaling course that he offers completely free. And then if you are out there and looking to get connected with his call center, I've interviewed with them and we'll be getting started with them shortly. So definitely recommend that. Those links are going to be in the show notes. And Cole, I have to plug those. I'm sorry. It's free value. And for those of you guys listening at home, we always try to help our guests, right? We help our guests and Cole, before we got on, was like, hey, I don't really plug a lot of my stuff, just send it to my social media. But I want to promote that because I've been through that. And I think it's great what you're doing and what you've got offering. So really quickly, I want to turn now to the lightning round. So the lightning round here is it's just rapid fire questions, short answers. We just pick a few questions and drive them to you. And so let's get started. The first question I'm going to ask you, Cole, is what's your ideal vacation in one sentence?
Oh man, my ideal vacation would be a place that's sunny with a beach and you could ski. That doesn't really exist. So, I mean, they're going to be on a beach, Maui, you're going to be skiing in Whistler. That's my ideal vacation.
There you go. All right.
Fair enough. What is your all-time favorite? Let's go business book.
That's it. I'm not a big reader. That's what people are surprised.
Okay, we could go to podcasts too.
I'm not a big podcast listener. How do you consume new information is a good question. I think Twitter. I love Twitter. Okay. I'm a reader, but not a book reader. I'd say the book that I have read that have helped me is more time management. Okay. 4-hour work week, that kind of stuff is kind of how I've kind of mapped out a lot of our companies and how we delegate. Then podcasts. When I do listen to a podcast, I like Alex Hormozi, I like how his brain works around business. So that's probably the one I spend most of my hours listening to.
Okay, perfect.
I love it. Now, you've talked a lot about quality of life, mental health, things like that. Who is the person that has most influenced that that line of thinking in your life?
I have a good friend, Will, who's been a big part of that. And also there's a guy named Mark Freeman. That's like a peer support guy who's works a lot of business owners and companies. And he's been a big person for me just and shaping like growing healthy companies in terms of how you delegate boundaries you set within your company and organization and for yourself around work, like setting boundaries for myself around work that like, hey, at certain times of the day, I'm just cutting myself off and I'm going to take a nap or hang out with my wife and respecting those. So things of that nature, he's been big for me in that. I think that's what it comes down to is, you know, enforcing boundaries on yourself as an entrepreneur. Otherwise you drive yourself into the ground.
I love it.
That's very accurate. What are 5 things that you could not live without?
5 things I cannot live without. I would say 1, hot tubs. I love hot tubs. Those are a big thing for me to settle myself down. 2, my wife. Got to get that one in there.
Got to throw that one in there.
3, I would say work. I couldn't live without work. Family. 4, and then 5. I'm going to try to do a different one here. 5, I would say steaks. I'm a big steak guy, so I don't think I could live without steaks.
I love it.
I'm going to be thinking about a steak for the rest of the night. It sounds like I'm having that for dinner.
Yeah, seriously. Seriously, that is a not a lot of those answers would come from a Southern California kid. So that's intriguing.
I'm not a Southern California kid. I'm from Seattle.
I knew. Yeah. I was going to say, I knew. Yeah. From your, you originally were not, but, yeah. As you've grown into it. All right. Well, based on the way you answered that question, I'm going to switch up this next question and say, what would be your vision for retirement?
I don't want to retire. I think that's the big thing. I think that's what I think also allows me to be successful. Like the guys that I know retire, they go downhill. Like my grandpa got kicked out of his law firm at 72, went downhill from there. My father-in-law, very big business guy. He was ran one of the larger financial practices in the world. And he still goes to the office every day, 75, wakes up, goes to the office and continues to he just sold his last company, but continues to operate every single day. And that keeps him going. And he's young. Yeah. You think the guy's 45 with how just his personality, how up to date he is with everything. So that's my goal, man. My goal is to keep my body healthy and keep my brain into something for as long as I can. I think it's a big part of what keeps people going into their late years is purpose. So I think work for me isn't like I told my wife last night, she was like, I was working in bed at like 11 PM. And she's like, don't you like want to go have lunch with a friend tomorrow or something? I'm like, no, I just want to work. And so I think for me, that's what I found out is it gives me purpose a lot of the time. So, you know, I don't want to, retirement's not something I even think about.
I love it. All right. I could kind of tell, like I said, I changed that up because of the way you answered that question. All right. So final question. This isn't part of the lightning round. This is just, we like to ask every guest this. If you lost everything except your knowledge, what would you do in your first 30 days to close a deal?
Ooh, a real estate deal. Yeah, I put this video up. It's actually a couple of days ago on my Instagram. I think I know what I would do. It's very simple. I would buy a list of people that live out of state, the state I want to be in, and I would call and text them every single day. And I would spend an hour to a day talking to them, make offers, and that's how to get my first deal. And that would probably take 30 to 60 days. Like it's a very, very simple process to get your first deal or two. People overcomplicate it.
Absolutely. absolutely. I think it's very, very simple. So we appreciate that, Cole. We appreciate you being on with us today. And thank you all for joining us today. If you like this week's dose of the RE Junkies podcast, please subscribe and leave a review on your favorite podcast platform.